You are listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Seltzer, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter Radio. I'm your host, Kelsey Mullen, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. And joining me always from Edmonton, Alberta, is Brendan Lear for our 41st episode, buddy. We eclipsed the 40-episode mark.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Absolutely unbelievable.
50 episodes is just around the corner. We should reach that mark, I'm guessing, early 2007, so...
Kelsey, I'm noticing that not only do we spam the internet by our radio show, but now you have created yourself a MySpace page.
Yes.
I'm not a big practitioner of MySpace. I don't know anything about it, really. But I know it was impossible to find your page without a web link.
Yeah, people go to MySpace, and you can check it out. It's myspace.com/FCFradio, and there's our profile. And whenever there's a new show, I've been posting bulletins telling people who's on the show. And check that out, and obviously people can contact us through the MySpace page, or they can email us at radio@fcfighter.com. And then we're also available up on iTunes. We have been for a while now, so slowly but surely, buddy, the FCF radio train is on its way up the mountain and hopefully not to its ultimate demise. Well, we've plugged that site enough now, so let's get on to plugging our show.
Well, this year is the year of technological advancement for me, because not only have I been now on MySpace, I'm contemplating sending my first text message via wireless telephone.
Wow. That's intense. I'm sure the listeners really give a damn, man.
I'm going to try it over Christmas.
Well, good luck, buddy. Can we get back to MMA? Do you mind?
I'm sorry, Kelsey. Yeah. I'm sorry.
What's
on the show today?
We got Mark Hominick coming on the program. He, of course, fought in Ring of Fire a couple weeks ago. He's been busy moving and traveling. So we finally got a hold of him. He's coming on the program. And then Roy Markham is going to be on the program as well. He's upcoming fight in the IFL Championships end of December. So he's going to be on the program as well. So we're looking forward to that. And let's get to it. You're tuned to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League kicks off its 2007 inaugural season Friday, January 19th at the Oracle Arena. See Marie Smith's Tiger Sharks battle Marco Huas's Condor. Plus, sibling rivalry comes to life as Ken Shamrock's Lions square off against Frank Shamrock's Razor Claws. Be there Friday, January 19th, 7:30 p.m. at the Oracle Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 510-625-8497 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With a Full Contact Fighter shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
This is Spencer the Kingfisher, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now, and I believe it might be for the third time on the show, which is a very prestigious honor to you, Mark, is Mark the Machine Hominick. Mark, how are you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Kelsey?
I'm doing well, man. It sounds like you've got a pretty busy weekend going on for yourself, so I'm probably...
Yeah, I just got back from the fight, and actually moving into a new place here. My girlfriend and I got a condo, so... just in the midst of everything.
Yeah, man, I hate moving. I can't stand
moving. Yeah, it's not very
moving.
Fun, you know.
Did you get all the big, burly Team Tompkins boys to come down and help you out, or what?
Oh, yeah, they're, you know, it's like a family. they're there helping, too.
Yeah. See, Brendan just mentioned
to us off air that you got your satellite. So that was the first thing on your list of priorities before the
bed
and
the first
kitchen?
Thing was to get the Fight Network hooked up. That was the first priority before I moved in my, you know, anything. Got the Fight Network going, so...
Sweet.
Kelsey and I just got the Fright Network here in the West, so I think our at least we have something now for our American viewers to be, our listeners to be jealous of.
Jealous about, for sure. Well, yeah. I think they're supposed to go North American wide this year, and it's a pretty popular channel.
And see, it must be nice, Mark, because Brendan and I used to live in the same city, actually. I used to live in Edmonton, and if memory serves me, I think I helped Brendan move twice, and Brendan never returned the favor, so that just goes to show you what true friends really are.
Yeah, exactly. He's got your back.
Of course, the only place you've ever moved is to Vancouver, so
yeah.
Isn't that over and above?
Well, I got you this high-paying gig, didn't I, Brendan? So
yes, true enough.
Mark, you know, you're coming off a win over Doug Edwards at Ring of Fire last weekend, I guess, December 9th, and rear naked choke in the second round. My first question for you, Mark, is what did you know about Edwards going into that fight?
All I really knew is he's from King Jangira Thai Boxing School, and he had over 25 Thai Boxing fights. So I knew I was going in there against a tall, traditional Thai boxer. See any tape on him or anything like that. So, I was just hungry to fight, and I didn't really care, to tell you the truth. I was ready to go against anyone they put me against.
Yeah, and I mean, he just had a record, I think, of something like 2-2, not too much MMA experience, but like you mentioned.
Yeah, I think he's 4-2 in MMA and over 25 Thai boxing. So, right. Styles make fight, and it was stylistically, it was a good matchup.
And, I mean, if anyone can judge another guy's stand-up capabilities, it'd be someone like yourself from Team Tompkins. What are your thoughts on his stand-up game?
He was pretty much a real traditional Thai boxer, like standing up tall, kind of on one foot, trying to paw with long jabs and long push kicks. But I think my movement and my hand speed were too much for him, and I think that's what ended up beating him.
And at the end, you got the rear naked choke.
The whole fight was stand up, and I knocked him down with a flurry of punches, and then I just followed up with ground and pound and got his back. But, basically, with the exception of the last 30 seconds, the whole fight was on the feet.
And you weren't apprehensive at all about that, so you didn't go in just to get the MMA win, but you wanted to test your stand-up a little bit?
For sure. It's great to get in there with the tall guy because, like I said, we took the fight also because he was 5'11", the same height as Hioki. So, we wanted to get in there, get my hands going against a taller opponent. And so, it took me about a minute into the first round to really test out his reach, and then I started hit with my hands.
See, and that's interesting, Mark, because some people would argue that you're fighting, and why not go in? You've got way more MMA experience, and more ground experience, wrestling experience. So that's interesting you would say that. Instead of going in and saying, okay, I'll just get this fight to the mat where I don't know a lot about him, but one would assume that you have a clear cut advantage. Instead, you thought, okay, well, let's just stand and see where he's at.
For sure, I'm setting up. I want the belt back from Hioki, and I want to get in there with a tall opponent and really find my range.
What is the organization of Team Tompkins going to look like now with Sean spending more and more time in the States?
It's going to be back and forth. We're going to be doing a little bit more traveling, which is good because we get to train with Dan Henderson and Jason Miller, and there's a whole whack of just great fighters that are training down there in Temecula, and it goes back and forth. They'll come up and we'll go down, so it's a good trade-off.
Now, and you mentioned Edwards having a similar body kind of type to Hatsu Hioki, and of course that's the next big fight for Mark Hominick. That's going to be.
I've been waiting for a year for this fight.
Yeah, is it February 9th?
February 9th, yeah, at the Bell Center in Montreal.
Right, and so you're going to be taking Hatsu Hioki, who's got your you used to be the TKO super lightweight champion, and that's going to be the big rematch. Where do you feel you're at compared to a year ago, Mark? Do you feel a lot more confident going in this fight? And how's your mindset?
The first fight, I just did not fight well. I didn't fight my game. I took the fight to the ground. He's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu. It was just a stupid game plan by myself, and I didn't fall through with the fight I should have fought.
Yeah.
But you clean yourself up and fine tune everything, go back and get the win now.
And is there any news on what's going to happen with you in the UFC after that? Is there any possibility that we'll see you in April at the Bell Center again?
There's Sean's been trying to get me in there as well as Stefan. Hopefully I'll be fighting in the Montreal card. I'd love to be able to fight there in the UFC in front of somewhat of a home crowd. It's going to be pretty exciting. But, my first priority is Hioki, and that's, my focus right now.
Do you think that would be a home crowd, actually, because you, from Ontario, you're going to Quebec and beat Quebec fighters in TKO Do you think they would accept you as one of their own?
Oh, for sure, yeah. Like, you know, I've been fighting in Montreal for, you know, 5-6 years, so you know, I got pretty, you know, a lot of fans that support me there.
And, you know, last time you were on the show, Mark, I asked you about Hatsu Hioki and the fact that some people perhaps weren't fully aware, at least in North America, we weren't all very fully aware of Hatsu Hioki. And when you lost him, it was kind of seen as a bit of a surprise. And since then, he's gone on to fight in Pride. He's established a very credible record, 11-1. And then just recently, he had a TKO win in Shudo in November, a very short, brief victory. So, I mean, now considering that he's gone on that kind of streak, does that even further enforce to you the fact that this guy's a great fighter, and does it kind of give you some comfort that other people are recognizing the fact?
Yeah, for sure. Like, it just, you know, like, you, no one really knew about him, like you said, like, when he fought me, and all of a sudden, you know, he beat the guy who just beat Eve Edwards, so all of a sudden, his stock just rises. But, like, it's the same thing, you know, when I beat Eve, like, a lot of people didn't know about me, and, you know, that's the way the game is. Sometimes, you know, you make your name off beating, you know, someone else with a name, I guess.
Yeah.
And he's really gone on to solidify. You know, he is a top contender. Like, beating Jeff, I was blown away. You know, I was blown away by that, and that just fuels me to, you know, get the win even more.
And apart from your traditional training, have you incorporated anything else? In the preparation for your fight.
For sure, Sammy and I started training at the University of Western with the wrestling team. We've been training there twice a week. We go in there Wednesday and Fridays for scrimmage. So that's really helped our game. We're training with Ray Takahashi. He's an Olympian, and he's a great coach.
Their Olympic wrestling team, or their Olympic-style wrestling team?
No, the university wrestling team, and the coach went to the Olympics.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, like a while ago, but I mean, he's an excellent coach.
Now, Mark, it seems like for the first time in your career, at least from what I can remember, you've drawn a little bit of fire more from, I would say, fans who aren't as familiar with Team Tompkins, etc. Have you heard about any of those kind of criticisms as far as your UFC appearances? I mean, you've got your fans who say, hey, like, this guy is taking out George Gergel, and he's Edwards. Very impressive. How come we haven't seen Mark back in the UFC? And then there's critics who say, well, he hasn't been back in the UFC because it's Gergel, he was accused of running, etc. What would you say to those kind of criticisms?
Well, you know, it's easy to criticize fighters from the sidelines, you know. But that's part of the game. It's like any sport. You're gonna have critics, and there's gonna be people, you know, try to knock you down, and you just gotta, you know, brush off your shoulder. Like, that's great. As long as they're watching the fight, as long as they're talking about the game, talking about my fight, that's all I care about. Really. You know, I have a lot of great fans that really support me, but again, there's gonna be critics in every sport, and every athlete's gonna have them.
Well, and if you consider, I think the key point to remember here is you're 2-0 in the UFC. It's not like you've got a loss or.
And you know, I'm also going up in weight class to fight at 55 for UFC. So you know, there's a lot of different factors that people, you know, sometimes neglect.
Right.
There seems to be a noted shift in the UFC to emphasize, at least showcase smaller fighters. So the new reality show is going to be exclusively 155ers. The last Ultimate Fight Night, or whatever they call it now, was almost all welterweights. What do you think about that? Do you see that as being a trend that's going to persist?
Well, you know, they're just trying to build up contenders in the division. You can see that, and you know, for me, I'm obviously loving the fact that they're doing the reality show at 155, because you know, there's 60 opponents.
Yeah.
You know, people know the names from the show, and you know, those are just like 16 opponents that you're going to have, and it's going to make the division that much more popular.
Is there ever any talk about you going on the show?
There was for a while. Like Stefan Petri was, you know, had asked me if I was interested, and it was a time where you know, my dad had just passed away, and you know, like, my mom's home now by herself, and I just didn't want to, you know, leave her at that point, you know, point in time.
And of course, those factors outside, which are extremely serious. I mean, would you have considered doing it otherwise? I mean, would you want to go? Do you feel you're one of those fighters that could go and be sequestered like that?
And the other issue with me is, like, by doing that, it kind of somewhat commits myself to 155. Mm-hmm. Really, you know, like, I'd like to just keep my name in the UFC, and then hopefully, you know, when they bring the hopefully they bring 145 and be a title contender like right away. But, you know, it's just, whoever they give me in the UFC, I'm going to fight. That's just the opportunity. You can't split up.
And do you have any sort of inside track on that? I mean, obviously the UFC next year has plans to do even more shows than they did this year, which is almost hard to believe. Do you think, could you see the 145 division coming in at some point?
You know what? I really do. I've been wishing all along, but it's gonna, more weight classes are gonna be included because there's just gonna be that many more fights, and the division itself is just it's amazing. It's just like the lightweight division, just you got the speed and the power, and there's so many good fighters. Like there's Uriah Faber, Ivan Menjivar. There's just like a whole slew of great fighters.
And do you know any more than the rumors that Kelsey and I have heard about their becoming a 145 division?
No, not really. I don't get too caught up in all the rumors. I just I let Sean worry about the manager worry about all that. I worry about training and fighting. From what I hear, there's talk of it, so I hope so.
And what about Sam Stout? I mean, you guys are going to both be fighting at the upcoming TKO. And you've had I believe you've had several other cards where you both have competed. What's that going to be like for you guys? I mean, he's the lightweight champion, I believe, in TKO. So you've got a couple of huge bouts on the same night there for Team Tompkins.
It's a busy night, that's for sure. Like, any time we're at TKO, because we normally have about four or five fighters, so Sean's, running back and forth, but we have a good team that really supports every guy, gets them warmed up and everything like that. But another thing why we do book those fights together is because then we can obviously train together, and we're always, peaking at the same time and, striving towards the same date. But sometimes it does get a little too much for Sean. Like, Sean doesn't really want us both fighting on the same shows because he just thinks it's too much for him, too much focus or neglection, I guess, like, to one guy or whatever.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit more about your situation in the States, your training partners in the States, and what kind of different looks you've learned from the different influences you're being exposed to down there.
Well, we're still, I'm still in contact with Jeff Kern as well, and I'm going to go up there in January to help prepare for Hioki because obviously, he fought him and he's got his own insights about him. But down in California, like with Temecula, it's just, it's just amazing wrestlers. Like, just it's a hard training camp. You're always having great fighters go through there, and there's no way your game can't improve by training with those guys. It's amazing. You soak it up like a sponge.
Yeah, when we just had Sean on a couple of weeks ago, and I was joking with him that I wanted to keep his air miles because the guy's always traveling. But it sounds
that guy's more planes than I know.
Yeah, but it sounds like, I mean, the rest of you are traveling across the continent back and forth all the time as well, from the sounds of it.
But that's the commitment you have to make to better yourself. Sometimes if you get in that path of just training with the same people, and you don't go outside the box, but between, going to different camps, and it keeps you sharp. It keeps you hungry.
Are you basically fully integrated with the camp of the IFL team then as well, or do you guys separate at times?
Pardon me?
Are you fully integrated with the IFL Bruton's IFL team in terms of your training, or do you guys?
We are not. Sean is because I'm not associated with the IFL.
No.
At all, yeah. Like, it's Hordecki will go down and train with them and with Boss team, but yeah, that's Sean and Hordecki. Like, Sammy and I aren't included with the IFL at all.
So you guys do split up then?
Yes. Yeah.
And then did you get a chance to see? We've been asking a lot of the fighters this last week's shows. Did you get a chance to see the 60-minute special on Mixed Martial Arts?
Oh, it was great. Yeah. Like, I was sitting there after the Ring of Fire. I was watching with Sven Bean, the promoter, and Sean, and we were just like. Looking at each other, like, look how far this sport has come. This is great. Like, there's 60 million people watching that show. That was just great exposure. It was a great, great show.
And so I've taken it then, if you're probably, you're probably not privileged to Chris or Sean's stock portfolio from the sounds of the IFL stock. We had Rory Markov on, and he was joking about the fact that he got in, and Brendan and I shamelessly had to admit that we didn't get in on that IFL stock, which is going through the roof.
Yeah, the sport is blowing up, and like this, that's when we were looking around, like when we were watching the show, and we're just like, we are in at the right time. We are just, we're just part of that boom. It's just like, back in the 60s, when the NFL was just kind of just getting its kickstart, and that's the kind of feeling, we're having. It's just like, we're part of this, and it's exciting.
Yeah. Brendan, do you have anything else for Mark?
Yeah, I guess that. Well, just to follow up on your comments, it's interesting. I think not a lot of people have perspective, but it seems like the wealth of really great fighters in MMA now are just now in their, you know, in their 20s, like the sort of peak of the curve. That means you could literally have these same fighters fighting for another decade. So,
for sure.
How do you keep perspective on fights that you either win or lose, and if you think your career might go on for another decade?
Yeah, well, you mean, like, you gotta take the right fights, you gotta train right, you gotta, you know, you have a good manager that, you know, lines you up right, and there's so many options right now, though.
Well, Mark, we appreciate you coming on the show. We'll let you get back to directing all the movers and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, we wish you take a time out, and best of luck in the new year when you go after a Yoga.
That's it. You know, keep your eyes peeled on that fight. He's getting knocked out.
Okay. Mark Machine Hominick, thank you very much, and best of luck.
Well, I appreciate that.
Good luck.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BulldogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BulldogFight.com. Make it matter.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio for, I believe, his second appearance now that we're doing so many shows. I'm having trouble.
Number two.
Yeah, keeping tallies. Mr. Rory Markham. Rory, how are you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
I can't complain. Rory, of course, is getting ready for his upcoming IFL Championship fight taking place in Connecticut December 30th against the Wolfpack's Chris Wilson. Rory, my first question for you is, what do you know about Chris, and what's the game plan going to be going in against a guy like Chris Wilson from Team Quest?
Well, you know, me and Pat have definitely, it's funny, you know, we were up at 9 this morning working on our game plan. You know, we anticipate him wanting to stand for me for a little bit, you know, stand with me for a little bit like every other guy, and, you know, and then eventually he'll probably be shooting, you know, but I'll tell you right now, I mean, I'm just not going to make the same mistakes I made in my last fight, you know, which is I kind of smothered myself a little bit too much and didn't give myself the space to really land some clean power shots and get the guy out of there. So, you know, we're making the right adjustments and getting after it.
Yeah, and maybe expand a little bit on that. I just actually saw your fight with Wisniewski was shown up here on Canada Sportsnet. I think it was last Sunday. I saw that fight. Entertaining fight. But maybe for those people who didn't see it, expand a little bit on what you're talking about as far as getting, you know, letting him smother you a little bit, etc.
Well, I'd come in, I'd overcommit on my punches. That's what I was doing. I would, instead of punching and then getting out and creating space, the proper amount of space in order to readjust and come back in and finally finish with that KO punch. He wasn't really, I mean, he's a smart fighter. He's a really good fighter, Keith Wisniewski. And, you know, a lot of, you know, I was listening to the commentary not too long ago, and it's like, a lot of people thought, you know, Rory Markham was going to mow through Keith Wisniewski, and it's like, dude, you know, do you guys know who that guy is? You know, like, he's a good fighter, you know. I mean, I watched him take my, you know, one of the best guys down at Team Militich, Jason Black, you know, I watched him take him to the distance and have a great fight with him. So I was anticipating a war. But the adjustments I needed to make were that, you know, instead of staying in on my punches, is, you know, a little more in and out movement, you know. So we'll see, you know, see how it works. Make sure I made the adjustment. We'll see if I got smarter in this fight.
But Rory, how do you decide in your preparations to play on your opponent's strength, or how do you balance that with saying basically I'm going to go out there and dictate exactly what I want to do, no exceptions, and impose my will? How do you decide, and do you see that you work with a lot of great fighters? So
deciding different things. So how do you approach strategizing a fighter? Does it depend on how much you respect him?
Well, it all depends on, you know, what his weaknesses are. You know, I'm not going to go strength against strength with anybody, but I also, in my training, in my preparation, I'm constantly working on my weaknesses. Because in this game, it's about being as well-rounded as you can be. And, I mean, I'm kind of just, I'll reach a level of stagnation if I, you know, just sit and wait and, play on my strengths. I have to get in the room and work on my weaknesses, and that's something I do for every fight. So each fight, I try to get better, in doing that. So it's not really like, oh, I'm going to pick this one thing and I'm going to, work on this with this guy. I always try to work on just my weaknesses.
And in your fight with Wisniewski, it was basically going to a fourth round, right? I mean, the judges had said it was a draw. And then
right.
Keith couldn't continue. You looked like you were in pretty good shape. You looked like you were ready to go another round, and Keith couldn't. And then there was kind of some post-fight discussion about whether or not that was due to the conditioning. I think Keith took that fight on somewhat of short notice, or whether or not it was that shot he took right at the bell from you. What are your thoughts on that, or does it really matter to you?
Just for the record, Keith's a great guy. He was really cool. One of those guys that you're going out there and you're like, I got to fight this guy. He's awesome. I'd be at the bar having a beer with him if I could. But, I think honestly, regardless of the fourth round or whatever, if it hadn't gone to a fourth round, he would have gotten the decision or, whatever. But, that third round was a 10-8 round. No one can deny that, my biggest thing was, I know I hit him with some really hard shots, so, regardless if it was going to go to, if it was going to go to a fourth round, I knew that after the opening bell, within a minute, I was going to be in a very good position to win that fight, in the fashion that I usually like to win them in.
Tell me this, in fights that go the distance, a lot of new fans have been criticized for, we're just wanting to see people go in there and throw, and it'll be a lot of blood, and so on and so forth, having a knockout or a quick submission. But if you reflect back onto the fights, did you watch the Ultimate Fight night a couple nights ago?
Oh yeah, always.
Yeah. So there are a couple fights in there that went the distance, all 170 pounders. The first one, the Shoni Carter fight was fairly boring, I thought. But compare that to another fight that went the distance. Say, for instance, the Parisian or Thicket fight. That was actually, I thought it was a really exciting fight. What's mm-hmm. the difference? What do you think makes the difference between a boring, lackluster fight and an exciting fight if they both go the distance for you as a fighter? What do you see in there that is really making the difference?
Styles will always do that. Styles make fights, and especially in that situation when you're anticipating a fight to go all three rounds. If you go all three rounds and be an excellent fight, where the fans are chomping at the bit for more, or can go all three rounds and people are getting out of their seats and ready to leave the stadium. But, that's all styles. It's one guy, one guy's willingness to push the pace while the other guy's laying back trying to counterattack. But if you get two guys who are both in there trying to push the pace on each other, then you're going to get a really good night for the fans and for everyone. I mean, for me as a fighter, I really like when both of us go in there and really get after it. And everyone wins. I win and, regardless of the outcome, everyone wins. You have a great fight. This is one sport that I can say the fighters really truly are in it for the fans. Being that it hasn't been around forever and we haven't really had time to, get away from, ourselves and, just concentrate on ourselves. It's like everything's been about building this sport. So when you look back, you've got an entire team of people, fighters included, willing to, lay it on the line all for the fans. So that's what's really going to make this sport it's already exploding, but, this is just the beginning. I mean, wait. It's going to overcome baseball, football, soccer, all that.
Well, Rory, there's a couple of things that you've touched on so far in talking to you, and let me ask you this. You talked about a fighter style, and you also made mention of the way the IFL commentators are talking about Keith. What are your thoughts watching the fight? It kind of seems, and it's understandable. I mean, if you look at your record, you're 10-1. You've got many knockouts or TKOs, fights won by strikes. But what are your thoughts? How do you feel about that as a fighter, the fact that these commentators in the IFL are kind of pumping you up as a power puncher, you know, they're trying to market you as a star. Obviously, that's got to feel good, but on the flip side, like you mentioned, does that kind of give you some undue pressure in a sense?
No, bring it, man. Hell yeah. I mean, that's just something. I mean, that's what I got into this for. You know, was to be a star. I was either going to do this or be an actor. So shit. You know, I'm glad I'm really good at this. You know, so
I hang in the footsteps of Rowdy Roddy Piper.
No, absolutely not. That guy's insane. Me, on the other hand, I would. You know, that guy's got a whole basket of addictions that I don't want to get into. But I love it. You know, it's really cool. It's right where I wanted to be. You know, this is where I envisioned myself when I started this, and it's surreal. Everything's so, you know, looking at my E-Trade account today, looking at the IFL stock, it's like, is this all really happening to me?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Did you guys get in on that?
Did I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got in when it was 9 cents.
As fighters, were you guys offered a special incentive to get in on that, or did you just go in as a laissez-faire capitalist?
Capitalist. I apologize. I'm trying to catch up on lunch. My coach, though, I believe the coaches and staff were offered a nice little package from the IFL. Just great. You know, it just gives people more. It gives the employees more incentive to work for the company because in the end, they feel like they're working for themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you get a chance to see the 60 Minutes piece that, you know, to really covered in depth the IFL as well as UFC, but the IFL, did you get to see that piece, Rory?
Yeah, I did. What a positive piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really happy with that.
I mean, you look at it, and I guess it's safe to say a lot of people at the IFL's inception kind of raised their eyebrows a little bit, you know, sort of wondered about the team concept. Some people even wondered about holding events in a ring in North America because of what people perceived as the dominance of the UFC and having to have an octagon, etc. There was lots of somewhat subtle criticisms of the IFL when they first started up, or some doubts, I suppose you could say. And now here we are, you know, not even 2 years later, and the stock is booming, and you've got a show like 60 Minutes saying it's worth could be worth $150 million. Did you ever have any doubts at all that the IFL would get to this point?
None. I mean, honestly, none whatsoever. And that's even from the beginning of my career. I mean, I dreamt of doing this long before the UFC was ever even on TV and before there was the first pay-per-view. I always just wanted to be a great fighter. And then when this came, it's like investing my body in something. And then once I met the people of the owners of the IFL, I was like, oh, you know, really, really brilliant businessmen. I had no doubt that, you know, we're just seeing the beginning. You know, this is just the start. People think, you know, this is a great start, you know, nonetheless, but I mean, this is just the beginning, and I had all confidence. Just looking at their business model, there's never a hiccup, even with the first show. You know, everyone's got their hiccups and glitches in the first show, but they put on their first show like, you know, seasoned veterans. You know, that's when they knew. I was like, oh, well, geez, you know, I'm really dealing with, you know, consummate professionals here. So it's cool. You know, I've never had a doubt in my mind.
Rory, Carlos Newton was interviewed the other day, and he said one of the things he likes about the IFL is that fighters know what's going on, and if they win their fights, then they know when they're going to fight next, and if they lose their fights, they know what's going to happen. And a lot of you being able to foresee your future doesn't have to do with these externalities like how you act like and what you look like and whether your fight was beautiful or not. So you don't have to think about, am I going to get fired for having a bad fight or a boring-looking fight? Do you think that plays at all into your own preparation for fights? Does that take any pressure off you?
No, not for me, because I'm a worrywart way, you know, just with fighting, not with anything else. I mean, I'm a pretty laid-back guy, but when it comes to fighting, I'm all business, and, you know, I'll freak out. Anyway, I really try to get in there and do my best, and regardless of the fight or the opponent, or whether it's built up to be, whatever it is, I'm always looking at it like it's my last fight. So, it's cool. You know, I always prepare the same for each fight, work on my weaknesses, condition hard, and hopefully good things will come. So if it's Carlos put it pretty well there. I mean, that was all on his part.
Yeah, and one thing that I find I'm kind of getting used to a little bit, and I think it's probably a lot of people might be on the same page as me, is that when the IFL first started up, of course, they had a great roster of fighters, and there was always intriguing matchups from pretty much the first card, and that continues till today. But I guess what I'm trying to say is as far as the team concept and actually seeing the team matchups and watching the teams progress and see which team beats who, I think myself and probably a lot of other fans included are getting used to that. And when you look at the final matchup, which is going to be the Wolfpack versus the Silverbacks, you know, you look at some of the matchups. You got Ryan Schultz versus Bart Palowski, your fight, of course. Matt Horch versus Ryan McGivern. Aaron Stark versus Mike Sulisvi. Devin Cole versus Ben Rothwell. I mean, all those fights are great matchups. And did you, you guys as a team, at the beginning of the year, did you look around and say, hey, the Wolfpack are a team that have got a good shot of meeting us in the final?
You know, not me personally, but I know my teammate Ben Rothwell did. I mean, he's always scouting the competition. That guy, he's on top of everything. So I know I think he called it first. He was the first one to say, I think we're going to match up against the Wolfpack in the finals. So, I mean, I'm, like I said, I'm always just concentrating on my fight at hand.
And you had no pick? You didn't think, like, Anacondas or...
I'll tell you the truth. I had the Anacondas in the finals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I pretty much figured that we were going to meet them again right at the end of the year. That was my pick.
Sorry, Rory. Can you tell us anything about... it sounds like they're going to tweak the event a little bit next year, and that fighters that lose or fighters that win on losing teams are going to sort of be pulled out at the end of the year and sort of matched up against each other in kind of other super fights. Do you know any of those details? Have you guys been filled in at all about the tweaks that they're going to do with the league?
I've heard rumors of a Grand Prix at the end. You know, the best four fighters of each weight class are going to go after a belt. That's a rumor. I don't know how true it is right now. We have the ring system with the teams, but eventually there will be, eventually there will be one standout for each weight class because, I mean, you just have to be, you know, it's hard to have can't have a champion fighting on the team 5-6 times a year, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What would it be ideal for you in terms of fighting? How many times would you like to fight, ideally, to keep your chops up in a year?
Four times a year, every 3 months or so, because that gives you a... couple weeks to wind down, you know, a couple weeks to get back into it, work on technique, and then your 6 peak weeks. You know, that's perfect. I can do that 4 year, you know, 3-4 times a year. That's my ideal fighting pace. I'm not the biggest advocate of fighting like every, you know, I'm not a weekend warrior. I always like to prepare well for my fights and be healthy. You know, I don't like to step in the ring unhealthy.
Rory, while we've got you here, you know, since the George St. Pierre Matt Hughes fight, we've had Tim on the show, we've had Patrick Cote, we've had, you know, guys that trained with Matt and guys that trained with GSP and heard their thoughts on the fight. So while we've got you, let's hear your thoughts on Matt's fight against George.
Pardon me. You know, honestly, there isn't really a bad thing I can say about either guy. It's just, you know, Matt wasn't able to impose his game plan that night, and you know, the outcome was inevitable. You know, that's just, if you can't get your game plan off first, then, especially with a guy as dangerous as George, you know, bad things can happen. But at the same time, you know, George is he's a tremendous athlete. You know, you can obviously, that's obvious. And, you know, he got out there and got after it. Anytime those two fight, it's going to be a pick-up match. You know, when they fight again, it's going to be the same way. You know, it's going to be the first one to get their game plan off. And I think the next time around, Matt's going to catch him. So, you know,
is Matt going to fight in between? It's been unclear. So that fight supposedly signed, their rematch is supposedly signed for April. St. Pierre is going to fight Sarah in between. Is Matt going to have a tune-up fight for that, or is he just going to go back to back?
I have no idea. I haven't spoken with him, so I have no idea.
Do you have anything else for Rory, Brennan?
Yeah, my last question basically has to do with how many of you guys there are at Miletich, and whether or not you'll ever be able to fully celebrate one of your fights. And we were talking to Tim about this, and he said, if you celebrate it all after, because you win, you're there, and Matt loses. And he said, no, I didn't get to celebrate just because of Matt's loss. Everyone was so bummed out. So you fight, you win, Pat loses last time. So what's going to have to happen? Are you guys going to have to, like, hit on all cylinders, are all the stars going to be aligned, and what kind of party is that going to look like if you all actually win on the same night at the same time?
Well, you know, I mean, I got to tell you, man, I like to party, so that'd be great. But either way, we always win, lose, or draw. You know, Matt was somebody. You know, I was up in his room after the St. Pierre loss, and he's like, you know, it's not a huge deal. It's not the end of the world. I mean, you know, I'm going to go back in there. I'm going to make the proper adjustments and get back after it. And I was like, wow, you know, this guy. you know, it was just crazy to me. I was like, you know, it was great because it was a realization for me. I looked at him and like, that's how a champion acts. You know, I was like, right back to the drawing board. He wasn't sitting in his room, you know, throwing a temper tantrum. We were all playing cards, making jokes, and having a great time. So it's, you know, fighters, you know, being a fighter is what we are. It doesn't make us, though. You know, we are a lot of other things. So even as Pat lost with Tenzo, you know, I sat down next to him after that, and he's like, well, that was kind of anticlimactic. So, I mean, you know, it sounds ironic, but, you know, the truth is that this isn't our be-all and end-all, but this is something that we all just love to do and we're really good at. But, you know, if we go out there and do our best, then there's really nothing to really hang your head about. So we all, you know, but back to your original question, if everybody wins on the same night, that'll be a hell of a party, and I'll be having it.
Well, actually, and Rory, I've got one final question for you. Do you have any kind of inside scoop on this constant speculation that the IFL and Xbox might be teaming up to come out with a new MMA video game?
No, but I read that on the internet, too. That'd be badass.
I know. So, you know, you got to start thinking.
That'd be great. See my kids around a video game?
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about.
Forever immortalized. You know,
yeah.
And the one thing I got to say, and I come across as a bit of a geek here, but if they do it, all I got to say is compared to the previous MMA video games, they got to make the ground fighting better because the ground fighting has always been ridiculous. I mean, there's one game, I don't want to diss it publicly, where you could do a Boston Crab on the guy.
Yeah, garbage. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I hit the Boston Crab one time in sparring in judo.
Yeah, well, it's
so
judo,
it
buddy. It's judo.
It happens. You can hit it.
Be proud.
You forget it.
Would be proud of you, my friend.
All right, Rory. Well, thanks again for coming on the show, and best of luck at the IFL Championships on the 30th.
No problem. Thanks a lot, guys. Anytime.
Good luck, man.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League continues its 2007 inaugural season Friday, February 2nd at the Reliant Arena. See Boss Rutan's Anacondas battle Pat Miletich's Silverbacks and Antonio Inoki Sabres face off against Don Fry's Scorpion. Plus the super fight between MMA legends Matt the Law Lindland and Carlos the Ronan Newton. Be there Friday, February 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Reliant Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 713-629-3700 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
Hey, this is Bill, the Butcher Mahood. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, some interesting comments from Mark Hominick. And, you know, his career right now, it's kind of interesting. And we tried to sort of ask him certain questions about what he thinks is going on with the UFC as far as having him back to fight. And, you know, he's one of those guys that sort of, you know, on one hand, represents this new age of mixed martial arts where you actually see fighters competing for the UFC and also taking other fights in other organizations, which, you know, really a couple of years ago you rarely saw. One guy really jumps into my mind, a high-profile fighter for them right now, is Nick Diaz. You know, he's got a fight coming up in the Gracie Fighting Championships. I think he's taking on Thomas Denny. That's end of January. And he's still fighting and competing in the UFC. And then you've got a guy like Mark Hominick. It's kind of nice to be able to see fighters able to do that.
Well, I don't know about Diaz. He was darked out the last, I thought it was a fairly decent fight, and he was, left off the pay-per-view last time, and he wasn't even mentioned, during the pay-per-view. So maybe, what makes you think he's still in the UFC?
Well, yeah, I can't say for sure that he is still gonna be in the UFC, but one would hope. I mean, he had left for briefly, and then he came back, and I don't think the UFC, well, I shouldn't say I don't think they thought he was going to beat Josh Neer, but he handily beat Josh Neer, and then he won his last fight as well. So I would like to see him back. He's had, and when really, if you look at any of his losses in the UFC, he's never had a dramatic loss. It's always been very close. He's extremely talented, but yeah, who knows if he'll be back. But I guess that's kind of a side point. But as far as fighters competing elsewhere, what do you think, Brendan? I mean, do you think that the UFC is going to bring back Hominick? There are, like I asked Mark about the critics out there, and there are some people who, you know, are speculating that the UFC is not going to have him back because his fights haven't been, you know, his fight against George Gurgel, he was accused of running. Do you buy into that?
Well, I don't know. I think, don't they have a rule about that now? Did they actually institute a rule about turning and fleeing from your opponent?
I didn't read anything official. No,
you know, I understand
that as a strategy, because, you know, one of the ways of working your way out of the single leg is just to turn and just rip out of there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if your opponent's down in the UFC, because you can't kick him. That's basically all you can do. But at the same time, it looks, you know, it looks bad. It's unappealing visually. So I'm not sure, and I know the UFC has really come around more impressively as of late, and they'll bring fighters back if they if they have good fights and they look good fighting, but and so they can't care so much as they used to about losses. So it'll all depend on what his aesthetic is, and I'm sure they love him because there's always with Holmick the potential for a dramatic knockout, and he looks good standing. But I guess they have to balance that against the criticisms of his quote unquote running away. So
and I'm going to sound biased here, I'm sure, to some of the listeners, but I don't personally buy into that. I think that there's a few people out there who have sort of raised this as an issue, and when I say it, that there's people speculating, it's all on the internet, etc. There's nothing substantial. There's nothing official that I know of from the UFC. And I would find it extremely hard to believe. If you look at some of the performances of previous fighters in the UFC that have been brought back, I just would find it extremely hard to believe when you take someone like Mark Hominick, who's fighting at 155, normally fights at 145, defeats Eze Edwards, which no one expects him to. Against Jergali, it was clear they just didn't want to end up on the ground. And yeah, there's a little bit of running in the third round, but for the most part, I thought it was a pretty very entertaining fight. So I have a lot of trouble believing that that's indeed the case. I mean, how can they turn their back on a guy who's 2-0 in the UFC? Of course, he did lose to Hatsu Hioki after Eze Edwards, I believe. And it remains to be seen if he can defeat Hatsu in February. But I would speculate that if he does beat Hatsu Hioki, a fighter who's competed in Pride Bushido in February, that Mark Hominick will most definitely be back in the UFC.
Well, I would hope so, because he's a very well-rounded fighter and he's a real entertaining fighter regardless. But I'm not sure. You know, the 155 division is becoming incredibly deep in the UFC, and I think it's probably going to be 155 and 170. Fighters have, if they're in that weight class, have a vested interest in being in the UFC, and that's not the same with the other weight classes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely the place. It's definitely the place to be. Arguably, you're fighting the best fighters, and you get the best. You certainly have more opportunities to fight, especially with it sounds like the amount of events they're going to have in the next couple of years. And you get, even if you fight a three-fight contract that takes you a year and a half, you get a lot of notoriety that you would otherwise not get in smaller shows. So, I think 155 is the place to be, and the competition is really thick. Just think of how many guys we've seen only fight once there, and, how many more fights they have to have. And then there's going to be the whole crop of people coming in next year from 155 from the reality show.
Right.
So, I think you're going to have to fight to fight to get in and fight to stay in the UFC at 155 and 170 from now on.
And it sounds like it's been made official that it's going to be BJ Penn and Jens Pulver will be the coaches for the upcoming Ultimate Fighter show, which, as you mentioned, will feature only lightweight fighters. And if you break down the schedule, it would look like they would probably fight, I'm guessing, in April or so, maybe. Yeah, April or May. So that'll be an interesting matchup between Jens Pulver and BJ Penn.
So this thing's going to be shot in January. It takes six weeks to shoot. So
February.
How long is typically the run of the show? 2 months. So what do they usually begin them in April? Is that the case?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to start in April. So.
So what do they go? 2 months? A little bit more than that.
Is it? Yeah. So we might
not see BJ fight until
June
for another 6 months.
Yeah. No, but that aside, and it's too bad it will take that long. I think it's an interesting choice by the UFC, and I'm kind of glad for Jens Pulver too that despite his loss to Joe Lauzon, that they're still going to keep him in the mix because he's an extremely entertaining fighter. Another thing I wanted to ask you about too, it sounds like Pride's announced that they're going to have Nogueira versus Barnett part two for their Shockwave show. Your thoughts, Brendan? I know you're a fan of both those fighters.
Well, I think that's one of the fights everyone wanted to see. I find it hard to believe that what New Year's Eve is two weeks away now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're announcing fights.
Yeah.
So And then you announce, what, a third of the card or a quarter of the card?
I just don't understand
how pride, you know, do these fighters know that they're fighting the person and they don't say anything? Or are they just making these fights with two weeks left? Or, you know, do you get a call from Pride a week before and say, you know, do you want to fight in the biggest fight of your life next week?
I think typically what they've been doing, and sometimes it is in fact that case where they only give you a couple of weeks notice, but I think typically what they do, and if memory serves me correctly, I think it was about maybe a month ago, two months ago, maybe, time goes by fast, that they typically will announce certain fighters are going to hypothetically appear. So I think at that point they probably call Josh Barnett or Nogueira and they say, look, we're going to try to get you a fight, start training, etc., be in shape. And then they probably try to iron out exactly what's going on with only a couple weeks' notice. And you're right, I mean, that's got to be frustrating for fighters. But, you know, even when we've had people like Dennis Kang on the program who competes for Pride, he's acknowledged that it's somewhat that system, is that they sort of give you a couple clues, a couple of possibilities of who you might be fighting, and then they seem to sort of iron out the details and the contracts later on. So you kind of have a couple months with some hypothetical matchups to base your training on, but nothing's really set in stone. And then you're right, with only a couple weeks left, they seem to finally announce the official cards.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know why they have to work it that way. It would seem like, you know, if you have 2 or 3 months to build up a lot of hype surrounding the fight, you know, 2 weeks left, they announce a big fight like that. It seems to me to be very difficult to build up, especially outside of Japan, a real notice around the fight. You know, like, given Shockwave is supposed to be their biggest show of the year, you would think they'd have things ironed out long before that. But I guess Satya Bala's got more things to worry about these days and more loose ends to tie up than simply getting big fights for his Shockwave show.
Yeah, and there's still some, like you mentioned, not all the cards been announced, but there's been some rumors that it'll be Tatsuya Kawajiri versus Gilbert Melendez, which will be a fantastic lightweight fight. Shinya Aoki versus Joachim Hansen. And then even Fedor Emelianenko and Mark Hunt is still officially, I believe, on the plate, but
and there have been rumors of Fedor having a broken toe, and then rumors that it wasn't a broken toe, but just a bonk toe, and the fight's still on. So, you know, it's tough to say. I think Pride is doing their best to shore the dike right now, because there was a lot of bad press surrounding them, a lot of speculation. You know, when UFC was on its buying spree, whether or not they were actually going to buy Pride and so on and so forth. So, I think they're in damage control mode for a fair while there, and now I think they're beginning to turn that around.
Yeah, and it's always tough, I find, because you hear different confirmations and different reports from various sources, and it's always kind of hard to really iron out what is exactly going on. Is Krokop staying there? Is Fedor staying there? And it can be frustrating at times for fans. But you're definitely right. It appears that they're on in full damage control. There's no question about that. One other thing I wanted to ask you about, Brendan, is are you going to be handing in your votes soon for the Full Contact Fighter Northern Touch Canadian Fighters Awards?
Well, are you talking about the ballot that I got in my email today?
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to tell me what your picks are. And just to explain to people, last year we did the first round, my weekly column. I do a weekly Canadian column on the FCF website. It's called The Northern Touch. And generally, last year at the end of the year, we did some voting, usually poll fighters and trainers, promoters, and some of the MMA media in Canada. Last year we did Fighter of the Year, and George St. Pierre won last year. And then this year I've broken it down to three different awards. We're going to have Canadian Fighter of the Year for 2006, 2006 Canadian Breakout Fighter of the Year, and 2006 Canadian Comeback of the Year Award. For Fighter of the Year Award, we've got George St. Pierre and Dennis Kang as your choices. And it was tough, Brendan. I mean, when I was trying to come up with fighters to choose from for that category, I mean, could you think of anyone else for Canadian Fighter of the Year to include as a choice? Dennis Kang, George St. Pierre. And honestly, I sat there for quite a while trying to think of who really their accomplishments could even compete with those two. Am I missing anyone, do you think?
Apart from myself and yourself?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe the Black Mamba?
Coulter Gill?
But I don't think so.
Yeah, no, it's...
Because he only fought once and lost, so...
Yeah. Well, no, didn't he fight twice?
Did he fight twice?
I
only saw his one.
Yeah, I think he fought the first round, maybe. Didn't he win? Or... Yeah, no, I can't remember. But and then breakout fighter of the year, the choices were Chris Hordecki, Caleb Starnes, Jason McDonald, Mark Hominick, and the criteria was basically a fighter who is, you know, more or less relatively unheard of internationally speaking before 2006. And I thought that was a pretty good, you know, group of fighters: Hordecki, Starnes, McDonald, and Hominick. And then for the comeback of the year award, I threw in Krzysztof Szyszynski. He was at really turning his career around in 2006. Patrick Cote, who went, you know, couldn't put together a win in the UFC in 2005, and then goes on and has some key wins up here in Canada in 2006. Gets on the Ultimate Fighter show, goes all the way to the finals. Jeff Joslin, who was more or less inactive all of 2005, and he came back this year and won the Apex title, then made it to the UFC. And then Victor Valimaki as well, because he took most of 2005 off, started fighting this year and made it back to UFC, had some big wins. So those were my choices for Canadian Comeback of the Year. So
I couldn't argue for anyone else. And you do have the other category, and so if people want to really express their own opinions, they can just fire back to you.
Yeah. So, if anyone else wants to, like I said, this is a poll that we do it mostly through fighters and trainers, etc. But if any Canadian listeners are out there and they want to share their thoughts, you can feel free, radio@fcfighter.com. And, yeah, when you look ahead to UFC 66 and then Shockwave, I mean, that's a couple busy days for me, and there's lots of work going on around those 2 days.
I think that might, my wife might divorce me after these holidays.
Yeah, too much MMA.
Because you got like 3 nights of MMA in a row.
Yeah, it's going to be intense.
3 big nights. IFL, 29th.
I thought the IFL, oh, right, it is
29th. IFL, 29th, UFC, 30th, and Shockwave, that's actually going to be aired on New Year's Eve, which is great.
Yeah, and that really surprised me, because traditionally up here in Canada, I'm not sure what it's been like in the States, but traditionally up here, it's always been aired the next day.
And after working for you know, almost 15 years in the service industry, the last thing I want to do in New Year's Eve is go out with all the weekend warriors.
Yeah. True enough. All right, man. We'll talk to you later in the week.
All right.